Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host Alfred Addisk and James Corbett will join you for the second and third segment of the program today. And today is Thursday, March 17th, 2016. Happy St. Patrick's Day to all of you. I'm going to do the market report, and then we got a little bit of a special for you. It's going to be magically delicious, since it is St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, I have to get a little hokey every now and then. So let's go ahead and get started right away for the market report today with gold. A little bit of pressure on gold after the spot market closed. In the aftermarket, it started to trade down in the New York market, 550 to the downside at 1257.60. You have silver still up 29 cents at 1599. Platinum was up 6, 987, with palladium up 11 at 596. You have the USDX today trading much weaker, 0.92 at 94.79. Crude oil, crude oil, 40.19, up 1.73. And the paper markets today, of course, they rallied after Janet Yellen was not going to raise rates. Off the highs of the day, 155 on the Dow, 17,480. The NASDAQ was up 11 at 47.74, and the S&P is up 13 at 2,040. The 10-year yield, that backed off a little bit, 1.90%. Down 0.03. And of course, we saw the euro getting stronger, 1.13, and that was also up 0.93. So that's pretty much working the opposite of the USDX today. And again, the foreign markets, the Germany was down really early this morning. They were down like 2%. They came back to just below 1%. So they also recovered. Hong Kong was up about 1.25%. And that's pretty much in the markets. The markets did enjoy the Fed not increasing rates, but a little pressure on gold, and that's okay. Gives you a great opportunity to be making purchases at a little bit lower price. We do. I don't usually offer these as a special, but I got them at a really good price. Very fine condition. VF, $20 Liberties, selling for $1,325. Remember yesterday, that was the same exact price as the bullion special I had yesterday. So when you can pick up $20, very fine condition, Liberty gold pieces, and all coins are very solid VFs, There's a great mix of pre and post 1900 dates in this lot. And this is the close to the cheapest premium that we have sold in over 13 years. So it's a great price for these coins. I mean, picking up $20 Liberties at the same price as a bullion American Gold Eagle, come on. If you don't have any $20 Liberties in your portfolio, now's the time to get them. And if you want to step up in quality to a Mint State 61 $20 Liberty gold piece that's certified by NGC or PCGS, hey, this price is only $70 more than what we were selling those gold bullion coins for yesterday. $70. It's an incredible buy. And these prices at these levels are limited, so you must give us a call so we can extend these low prices to you. 800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. So the Dow had a good day today, and it turned positive for the year. And, of course, since the beginning of the year, the index was down as much as almost 2,000 points in just the first 3 weeks of 2016. So I guess happy days are here again. And, you know, this incredible rebound is supposedly driven by a spike in oil prices. Well, you know, it wasn't that long ago we had $26 oil. Yes, it is now at 40. And it was interesting because today I was reading, there was an article that reported 800,000 barrels of oil was missing from their numbers, meaning there was less supply, therefore prices rose. How convenient. How convenient to all of a sudden find out that there was 800,000 barrels of oil missing. And there's a lot of reasons you can have this number of barrels of oil missing. But certainly the way it was reported was, you know, supply is less, so therefore the prices have to rise. And they did. So, again, the misinformation that you find on the internet and how they can sway people's thoughts and minds on information, it just really, and that's why I am constantly looking to see and reading both sides to see what is the truth out there. It's very difficult to find the truth, but we do a great job here at Discount Gold and Silver and on these programs, Financial Survival. Again, you know, the Dow was raised because of the Fed decided to slash its plans to raise interest rates. So the Fear and Greed Index that I talk about as far as looking for a trend, you know, it wasn't that long ago, a month ago, that it was, you know, flashing extreme fear. Now it's extreme greed. And it's just like, you know, if people are that easily manipulated, that's probably a lot of the problems that we have in this country today is why. But let's go over some other news that was released today. The number of people hired into a new job or quitting an old job, hey, both declined in January. You know, again, you know, you have the Dow wipe out a 2,000 drop. Just because of oil. Well, I don't think those people have been rehired yet. I don't think they're bad loans. I don't think they're going to recover the ability to pay those bad loans to these banks. You know, maybe they were able to eke out a little bit of a payment, but you know, look at all those back payments that, you know, that they were defaulting on. So yeah, you know, just because oil is at $40 doesn't mean that the oil industry is back and the world is happy once again. 5 million people were hired in January, but that was down from 5.4 million in December. The number of people quitting declined to 2.8 million from 3.1. And the number laid off was little changed at 1.6. So, you know, again, you know, the openings and labor turnover survey, the brief term for that is JOLTS. It just shows what goes on behind the numbers when the economy has added 172,000 jobs that the Labor Department had previously reported. So the decline in quitting in January, it just represents a shift towards a less healthy mix of job separations. And so, again, things are not as rosy as they'd like you to believe. how many of you believe that things are really rosy out there? Chief executives of large U.S. companies, hey, they're downgrading their 2016 hiring plans and growth expectations. You have more of the top corporate leaders that say they expect to cut employment at their firms in the next 6 months than to add jobs. This is according to the Business Roundtable first quarter CEO. They need to shorten these titles. CEO Economic Outlook Survey. That's the Business Roundtable's first quarter CEO Economic Outlook Survey. This was actually released a couple of days ago. The groups, they represent the largest, the country's largest firms. Here's the numbers. 38% of those polled expect their companies to reduce employment in the next 6 months versus 29% expecting to increase employment. Now, if you go back to the fourth quarter survey, it showed 34% expecting a decrease. So that number has climbed. The CEO said that the U.S. economy would grow 2.2%, you know, and you have to remember what they're basing their assumptions on. You know, yes, their experience in the markets, but also information that is gathered by Washington and the Federal Reserve. They can't change things too drastically or it'll affect their share prices. And you had the CEO of Caterpillar come out. He's calling on Washington to ratify the TPP. Of course, that's no big news there. Of course, all these multinational corporations are doing so because I do believe that has something. It will affect the currency exchange rates because these corporations are getting killed due to our stronger dollar. That is why I believe, you know, you can define whatever you want, deflation. These corporations are having a difficult time, and they need a weaker dollar to compete. So, of course, he would call for the TPP. They're hurting. Their Caterpillar stocks are dropping. In fact, there is also warning from Caterpillar to advise Wall Street, lower the bar for next month's earnings report so they can beat the street. So, hey, if you know you're having a bad quarter, you just tell Wall Street, hey, lower the bar for our expectation, so when we give our numbers, we're not going to get hammered, and your Dow won't drop significantly. But they've been doing this for years. This isn't anything new. You know, the street always gives much lower expectations, so corporations can, you know, either meet or beat, and everybody gets this warm and fuzzy feeling, and the stocks remain strong. Something interesting about this roundtable's outlook index, the fourth quarter, going back to the fourth quarter, it did increase to 69.4 from 67.5. This is their outlook. But a year ago, that reading was 90.8. So it dropped from 90.8 to 69.4, and which they feel indicates their economic expansion. That is a huge drop in 1 year. A couple weeks ago, I had started a report, which was a timeline of debt creation since 1987. It's historic. Proportions of the amount of debt that was created in each recovery from every recession since then was basically recoveries were created by debt bubbles to provide the illusion of recoveries. With each bubble created, it was larger and larger, and now it not only is here and it's extended around the world economies and markets. And I don't have time to finish that report. I was supposed to do it last week, but because James Corbett couldn't make it, Al and I did the program. So I did post the report in our newsletter. So make sure you sign up for the newsletter at our website, dgscoins.com. You can go to the website, and you can also view the newsletters from the website. They are archived on a weekly basis, so you can also get that full report at the website. And these debt bubbles are destroying the world's monetary system. It isn't the money that is going to be lost. It's going to be yours. And I have this little article today. It's about Italy. And yesterday we talked about the number of foreign entities that are dumping the U.S. debt. And when talking about debt bubbles, here's just another story, which is of Italy, about how insane the world financial system is and how close Europe is to collapsing. I mean, when you read about these the refugee problems in Greece, you know, what's happening to Greece? They closed down the road, so these refugees are stuck in Greece. You know, they can't get into the rest of Europe and Germany. They did stop that. And now all these refugees are stuck in Greece, supposedly for perhaps up to a couple of years. And how is that going to help Greece? I mean, who wants to go visit Greece? That's going to kill their tourism. And it's almost by design that they want to do this to Greece, maybe because they had a politician in there that tried to default on the debt, and they pretty much changed him around and said, no, you're going to do things our way, and this is what you get to deal with from now on, until you start playing ball with us a little bit better. So don't know. It's my own. Italy has the second largest debt in the European Union after Greece. And Italy is running, is expanding their budget in 2016, trying to revive their growth. And it is against the European Union's rule of acceptance. So they're stretching the rules. Rome has asked for nearly 10 billion euros of further deficit spending in 2016. There was an article in Financial Times, and he talks about Italy's national debt clock. I mean, you can go to the website, nationaldebtclocks.org, and you can find out everything you need to know about world debt. Italy shows a 13-digit figure representing Italy's outstanding national debt. That goes up by a couple of thousand euros every second. The debt is just under 2.2 trillion, or about 133% of Italy's annual economic output. Now, despite this debt burden, the Italian government succeeded in selling two-year bonds at a negative yield. Who are these investors? Who are buying these bonds at negative yield with a government that has 133% of Italy's annual economic output of GDP? And of course, these are the central bankers. In other words, investors paid Italy, one of the planet's most indebted nations, for the past quarter of a century, the honor of buying its debt. Italian banks held 410 billion euros in domestic government securities in January. And this is according to the European Central Bank. These securities account for 10% of the bank's assets. We know Italy had banks closed. You don't hear anyone talking about Italy and how close it is. And if Greece was close to bringing down the European Union, what do you think Italy is doing? They're checking their banks. The central bank is checking the big banks of Italy every day to make sure they have enough liquidity in there. You've had banks that went under in December. You had holds on people's money. And I know you're asking, what does this all got to do? What does Italy have to do with the USA? It's very important to understand just how close they are and how close we are for this whole thing that will unwind. So when you hear about this in Italy, it's just not Italy. It's everywhere. And you have to make sense of it all. And I hear things, you know, people are going, I hear the craziest things about people putting 40% of their cash in money orders. It doesn't make sense. People talking about gold dropping to $700. Really? What about the Iraqi dinar? Or paying 60% more for the same amount of gold in a gram than you could purchase in a 1/10 ounce American Gold Eagle. Folks, there's a lot of misinformation out there. And it amazes me. And that's my job, to help you make the right decision so you can make it an informed decision. So give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. Rob West is going to join us tomorrow for a couple of the segments of the program. So make sure you tune in on Friday. I am going to break. Alfred and James will be with you after that.
Financial obligations or relationship problems have you feeling stressed out? When life is too much to handle, use Apothecary Herbs' emotional stress formula. Feel calm and more in control with herbs especially combined to provide the organic nutrition your system needs to help you cope. Complete instructions for maximum benefit and a money-back guarantee. You've waited long enough. Call Apothecary Herbs now. Toll-free 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at the 3Ws dot thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it: to secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now. American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
I'm Alfred Adams, and this is Financial Survival, and our guest is James Corbett, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, from thecorbettreport.com, C-O-R-B-E-T-T, report.com. James is certainly one of the most, he has a voice that's growing in the United States and globally, and certainly one of the most prolific commentators on geopolitics and what's going on in the entire world. Hello, James. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well today. How are you doing?
Good. Got an article here from CNBC, and the headline is Donald Trump's rise sparks alarm in Japan. The political elite in Tokyo is starting to confront a disconcerting idea that their indispensable U.S. ally could actually elect Donald Trump as president. The controversial businessman, now favored to win the Republican nomination, hits Japan regularly in his stump speeches for supposedly unfair trade practices and free riding on U.S. military predictions. Now, how much of this is news and how much of this is just noise? Is Trump really sparking any alarm in Japan, or is that just something CNBC has claimed to sell a couple of newspapers or TV commercials?
Well, this one actually might have a bit of a basis in reality. It is at least being reported in the actual Japanese media here. The Young Nation, one of the major newspapers here, just had a story on this. And I think the reason why this is being reported and being taken seriously is because Trump has specifically talked about making the Japanese government pay for the U.S. military presence in Japan, which would be a huge change to the military relationship there, and one that obviously makes uneasy the military relationship that's been in place since basically the end of the Second World War. So I think that worries some people. I've heard some quotes from certain diplomats saying that they don't think this is going to fundamentally undermine the military relationship between the U.S. and Japan, even if Trump does get into power, but it's still a worrying sign. And also, probably more importantly politically, at least at this particular moment, is the talk that Trump has had about the TPP and the fact that he might scrap that, which...
Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes, sorry, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the trade deal that just went into place between, I believe it was 13 Asian nations, Pacific Rim nations. And Japan was set to benefit from that, at least in terms of its auto industry. There's some other deals in there, but its auto industry specifically was looking for greater access to American markets. And Trump is talking the other way, protectionism. So they don't like that talk at all.
I was talking to Greg Hunter. We interviewed him yesterday. And Greg was saying that the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the terms of the Trans-Pacific Partnership will be kept secret for 5 years before the public has access to the details of whatever this trade agreement is. Now, assuming that that's true, you can correct me if that's wrong, but assuming that's true, how can the Trans-Pacific Partnership be good for America if they won't let us see what it says for 5 years?
Well, I would have to see what he's going on there, because the actual text of the TPP agreement itself has been released, and I've talked about it on my website. I've linked to it. I had an article up back in November when it was first released, three of the worst TPP clauses explained in plain English, which actually talks about some of those clauses. And of course, the ridiculous legalese that they're framed in, that you have to read through 17 times and understand 14 different, you know, codes of law in order to get a grasp of. But as far as I know, the text is out there in the open. So I don't know if there might be appendices and different side agreements that that may be under wraps. But as far as I know, the actual text is available.
Do you think it's good or bad? And for who? It'll be good for some people and bad for others.
Yeah.
So
well,
who's
going
to win and who's going to lose?
As we would expect with this free trade agreement and most other free trade agreements, it's not about free trade per se. It's about what trade will be regulated and how and by whom and under what conditions. And so generally the winners in these types of agreements are always big business at the expense of small business, if for no other reason than it usually puts in new regulatory and bureaucratic hurdles that are cumbersome for small businesses, and are obviously that's what big businesses thrive on, because they can then weed out the smaller competition that can't afford all the legalese, lawyers, and paperwork. I think that there's a mixed bag in here for different sectors, and there are different sectors of different societies that are against it and for it. And in Japan specifically, farmers are worried about basically allowing competitive produce in, especially rice and other things that have been protected here in Japan, protected for quite some time. But on the other hand, you have, for example, car manufacturers in Japan excited about greater access to American markets and things of that nature. So it is on a case-by-case basis. A lot of different people got different things out of it. But as I say, I think generally speaking, big business wins here at the expense of everyone else.
You mentioned the legal technicalities and the legal language, in the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and how you had to read it 17 times to find to discern the 14 different meanings. Do you know what the root meaning of the word "read" is historically?
I do not. You'll have to tell me.
Guessing.
Uh-huh.
Reading means guessing, right? And that makes a lot of sense. At first glance, most people, what are you talking about? How can that be? It makes a lot of sense because every word, or almost every word, has multiple definitions. And because each word has multiple definitions, you, when you're reading, you have to guess at what definition probably applies as you're reading through the sentence. But when you get into legalese, they go through all of this effort to try to control their definitions and their language in order to pin it down, because otherwise that ambiguity is there in virtually everything you read. So reading is guessing.
Right? It makes perfect sense. And for anyone who's actually tried writing something for general public consumption, I think you understand that intuitively, because you might write one thing and suddenly people are reading it in a different way that you didn't intend.
And
you
think, it really makes reading almost mystical in some regards, and writing is a little bit like sorcery.
Mm-hmm.
How do you combine
I don't want to get all
words?
Philosophical on you, but this is postmodernism in a nutshell. I mean, the idea that it's the reader that constructs meaning every time the text is read, and there is something to that. I think, as we say, I mean, there's every word has multiple possible meanings in different contexts.
You take a five-word sentence, and if each word has three possible meanings, the number of potential meanings for that sentence, I believe, is 5 to the 3rd. Huh?
Something
like that. The mathematical, you know, the just multiple. We got 3 for the first word, 3 possible, second word, 3 for the third, 3 for the fourth. All right. The number of possible meanings is extraordinary, and it's really amazing that we manage to read. I mean, how do you ever get this started?
Exactly. Well, so much of transferal of meaning is contextual. So we all kind of assume that we know that we're working from the same context. So when we use a certain word, we're using it in a context that we assume the other person will understand. But of course, in legal documents, you can't do that. You have to spell it all out. So that's why they get in. I mean, of course, it just creates an industry for the lawyers. But if you want an example of the TPP legalese, Chapter 9, the investment chapter, in Article 9.18.1, it says, if an investment dispute has not been resolved within 6 months of the receipt by the respondent of a written request for consultations pursuant to Article 9.17.2, that the claimant has incurred loss or damage by reason of or arising out of that breach, and provided that the claimant may submit pursuant to et cetera, et cetera. You get the idea. But this is actually an extremely important clause, because it's in talking about the investor state dispute settlement mechanism by which the companies that are wronged, so to speak, under this treaty will be able to sue governments for their restrictive regulations that cut into their trade. So that's a pretty important thing. But if you actually just read the paragraph that that's talking about it, I mean, 99.9% of the population would have no idea what it's talking about.
And even if you do have an idea, your idea is not absolutely clarified until you have to invest some time to unravel that maze. And one of the things that I do, I read case law periodically and whatever. I spot sentences in legalese that'll run in terms of most 200 words in a single sentence. 130, 170 words in a single sentence. What level of reading do you think, you know, are you a high school graduate? Can a high school graduate read a 150-word sentence? Can a college graduate read a 150-word sentence and understand what it means? I mean, this is the language of some extraordinarily sophisticated minds. And from my perspective, every time you see one of these enormous sentences that's telling you something is hidden, they've got a needle hidden in that haystack, and they're hoping that only a handful of people will be smart enough to see what that needle is. I've got another article on Trump. It says, neocon panic, Trump presidency would end New World Order. As eccentric billionaire Republican presidential hopeful Donald Trump continues to rack up primary victories, the party's establishment is beginning to wonder whether the political outsider can be stopped. Alarm, neoconservative pundit Ann Applebaum goes so far as to suggest that a Trump presidency would mark the end of the West as we know it. Is this a little hyperbolic, or does Trump actually, does he threaten to destroy the world? Is that what this is or not?
No, but perhaps the rising of the Trump candidacy is a reflection of the collapse of the West that is taking place. So I see this really as a manifestation of the disenfranchisement that people really feel in their real everyday lives, economically, socially, culturally, mm-hmm. and that has been growing to a breaking point in the last several years. And I think we saw that in 2007, 2008, the Lehman collapse. We saw huge protests coming up, both the Tea Party movement on the right and the Occupy movement on the left. And I think they had a lot of shared ideas between them, that they were pointing to the establishment party candidates as being the problem. And so I think this is a reflection of that. I think in 2008, the left was suckered in with the Obama hope and change. And I think in 2016, the right is being suckered in by Trump, that it is supposed to represent, oh, it's going to be this fundamental change. And, you know, they're putting all their hopes in this. And I don't think that's going to be the answer. But I certainly understand why this phenomenon is taking place. I do find it worrying because in this 2016 go around, we are seeing the violent reaction to this being raised repeatedly and dwelled on in the media, which is amplifying things and which is coming to a head now with these rallies and the protesters. And it does have a dark feeling to it because we have seen that divide and conquer narrative of black versus white and man versus woman and straight versus gay and all of these different divisions in society being played on for years and years now. And I think that is coming to a head where we're starting to see the culture war turning into an maybe less of a metaphorical war and into a real civil war. Uh-huh. And I think there is the element of that there, and it certainly could become that.
We have an article here that deals with CBS's Bob Schieffer. Veteran newsman Bob Schieffer, former anchor of CBS Face the Nation, is convinced that after the 2016 election, the Republican Party will be no more. According to Schieffer, on the Republican side, what we're seeing here is a changing of the guard. If Trump wins the nomination before the convention, it will turn the Republican Party on its ear. On the other hand, if it goes to an open convention, he says if Trump wins this thing up front, before they get to the convention, it's going to wreck the Republican establishment. On the other hand, if it goes to an open convention, it will be a bloody fight that could break the party into two parties. In either case, a Republican Party we used to know will be replaced by something new. Does that sound credible to you, or, again, hyperbole?
There is something to it. I think there is a possibility here. Certainly, we are seeing an overturning of all political the way the political game is being played. It certainly is being overturned right now, and I think there's going to be a lesson to be learned from this, however it plays out. I see it playing out in one of a couple of different ways. I guess one is that the Republican Party establishment does try to kick back in some way, whether that's a brokered convention, which I don't think is likely. There has been even the talk floated around of a third party or independent candidate with Republicans getting behind that and sort of splitting the party. Of course, either way, that basically guarantees that Hillary is going to become president. I might remember I said on this program months ago that I've always thought Trump was a ringer for Hillary. So anyway, interesting. Or I guess the other idea is that the Republicans really do just kind of give up and rally around Trump and say, OK, he's our man now. But in that event, if Trump doesn't win the election, it really could hurt the Republicans' chances in the long run in terms of there'd have to be some significant soul searching. OK, we've tried the establishment candidates and Romney and putting McCain and people like that up before, and that didn't work. And now we've tried the complete other direction, and that didn't work. I mean, that would be a serious crisis point. So I think we are at an inflection point, and within the Democratic Party. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've seen on left-wing sites talking about, oh, we'll have to hold our nose and vote for Hillary because, you know, we don't want Trump. So I don't think either party is going to come out of this unscathed. There are going to be changes. It's just a question of what form they take and how the establishment attempts to win people back.
I think the American people feel betrayed by both parties. And it's not just a question of frustration. It's not just a question of I don't have a job right now. All right, and I can't make the mortgage payment. It's not just that. We could accept that, I think, as a people if we understood the causes were external to this country and things happen. All right, you get over it. You get on with your life. We're not dealing with things happening. We're dealing with a government that seems to be bent on treason. They are moving in directions that are clearly contrary to the best interests of the American people, and they've been doing it for decades. But the people are catching up. They're beginning to realize this, and they're mad at the government. And if you'd like to respond to that, why don't you save it until after we get done with our commercials? I'm Alfred Addis, here with our guest, James Corbett, and we are going to take a break for some commercials, and we'll be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit, toll free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97%. Of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
I'm Alfred Addis here with James Corbett from thecorbettreport.com. That's C-O-R-B-E-T-T report.com. And as we broke for commercials, we're talking about the mindset of the American people. And I'm suggesting that they're not just frustrated because they're having a difficult time or they're unemployed or whatever. They're frustrated because the game is rigged by our government to favor certain special interests, major corporations that we talked about in the Trans-Pacific, can't even think of the last name of it, but in any case, the treaty, partnership treaty. They're feeling that the game is rigged, and that makes them angry. They don't like losing, but they don't mind losing in a fair game. But they're angry because it seems to be rigged. Do you see that also, or do you agree, disagree? What do you think?
I do. I think so. I think there's more distrust of government, dislike for government than ever before. All the polls show this with the approval ratings for Congress, for even just establishment media, which is why, I mean, it's interesting to watch the anti-Trump, the Trump response, the response to Trump, because it seems to me to be the flailing out of an establishment that doesn't quite understand that it has lost its power to simply label things as, oh, that's extreme. We can't do that. People don't care. And that's, it almost makes me think, well, is this some sort of false flag by the establishment? Surely they know by now that if you get Mitt Romney out saying, don't vote for Trump, then more people are going to vote for Trump. I mean, no one in the Republican
Party. Maybe they don't, though. You know,
maybe they don't. Maybe they're really that clueless.
The establishment was established by people who were very intelligent, very shrewd, and they left their seat at the table to their children.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
they bring up know what's going on. It may be the second or third generation. And we're the establishment. How do you spell the word? You know, I mean.
Right, exactly. Yeah, no, yeah. I mean, there is an element to that. And it does make sense from that third generation perspective. They say that by the rich families will lose their fortune by the third generation. Well, you look at Prescott Bush down to George H.W. Bush down to George W. and Jeb. I mean, at least George W. could be elected president. Jeb is, I mean, just a laughingstock. So, yeah, I mean, there is actually an element to that among the sort of West, the Eastern establishment. But I think there's another way of looking at this as well. It's not just the people's anger at the government. It's unfortunately, I think, again, a lot of this anger is being directed sideways at people's neighbors, basically. It's people against each other. And I had a conversation recently with David D. Friedman. He's an economist and a law professor. He was talking about the social contract, not as a voluntary contract that you would enter into in businesses, which is the way that a lot of libertarians and anarchist leading people would look at it as, well, this is why it's not valid because I never signed it, but more as a peace treaty. Ultimately, it's the idea that people will cede themselves to be ruled by a government in order to establish the peace, at least a semblance of peace between the warring factions in society. And from that perspective, it seems like the social contract is breaking down now, that the discrepancy between what the people on the left and the people on the right want is getting to that breaking point where they're not willing to live under each other's governments anymore, which means that there's a fundamental fight taking place here. And if we are at that type of moment, I mean, that's where, I mean, again, I keep coming back to the word civil war, and I don't know, I'm not expecting something like the 1860s here, but I really think something fundamental is breaking here in terms of the way that American society is structured and European society for that matter.
I think it's the perception of fairness. I think it's the idea. I mean, we can all accept the idea that you got a chance to get rich in this country if you want to. And we allegedly have an equal chance. If you've got the talent, the brains, the work ethic and the rest of that, you can prosper. But what people are beginning to suspect is, no, it's not that way. We are increasingly in a situation like the former Soviet Union with that joke, they pretend to pay us, we pretend to work. Yeah. We understand the game is rigged. And there's no point in busting your back in order to try to get ahead because, well, they have things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership that will make it easier for the multinational corporations to get rich and harder for small operators to even get started. That's the sort of thing that has to make some people angry. And I think that anger, Trump tapped into it. A lot of people blaming Trump. Say, oh, my gosh, Trump has caused all this anger and violence. And I think Trump didn't cause it. I think he just tapped into it. It's already there. And he was the first one to give it a name and recognize it and say, yeah, it's real. Does that make any sense to you?
Oh, I completely agree. It makes perfect sense. And really, I think of it as a further, I mean, we've seen this building up for years now. And I think the early signs of it would have been 2008, 2012, with the Ron Paul phenomenon. But that phenomenon obviously came and went with the elections themselves. And the Campaign for Liberty ended up just supporting a bunch of Tea Party candidates that didn't do much in Senate. And a lot of that energy seemed to be dissipated and wasted. I think this is recapturing the public's imagination, but along, not the same lines, but I think it's the similar idea that you're talking about there, the disillusionment with the idea of fairness.
I've got an article from Sovereign Investor, and the headline is $10 oil will trigger economic collapse. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley expect oil to plummet to $20 a barrel. This article is 5 days old. They expect Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley expect oil to plummet to 20 bucks a barrel, and Royal Bank of Scotland says $16 oil is on the horizon. Both British bank Standard Chartered and energy expert Dr. Gary Schilling warned we need to get ready for $10 oil. Now, this article is 5 days old. Oil has been jumping, you know, in the last little while. It's had a remarkable increase in price. Do you think we're going to see $10 a barrel oil in the foreseeable future? Or are these people just, you know, are they...
Unless they know something I don't, which is possible, mm-hmm. but I certainly don't see it going down to $10. I don't know if the recent jump is sustainable at this point. As I've said, I think, for the last several months pretty consistently, I think its supply is mostly baked into the cake for at least this year. I don't think we're going to see a significant jump up in price this year, certainly, and maybe not even next year. But having said that, I don't see it going that much lower than, say, where it, I mean, it tested the $30 mark, earlier this, last month. I don't think that it's going to get much below that point. I don't see it going down to $10 now.
Mm-hmm. Got another one here that deals with this indirectly. This is an article at Terraforming Terra, and the article headline is Preparing for the Collapse of the Petrodollar System. And he says, and the author of the article says, we are entering the age of free energy. Do meditate on that idea. I know one of several ways presently extant that, and additionally know how to create a massive power generator using only the potential in the atmosphere itself. None of this demands fuel. Well, the point being that we are entering some sort of an era where at least alternative energy is coming to bear. I mean, the Tesla motor car is evidence that something's going to happen. We're going to see electrical vehicles that don't run on combustion engines in the near future, and there'll be more. We'll see more of them. We're gonna, you know, and it should result in less demand for petroleum. If petroleum demand falls, will it take the petrodollar with it?
If petroleum demand falls?
Yeah, the demand for petroleum falls, and
right.
And we have alternative energy supplies. He's arguing the age of free energy is upon
right.
us. I'm not convinced that's
yeah.
true. It may be. I know a lot of people are pushing that idea, but I've yet to see it really work,
right.
happen, be tested.
Exactly.
Or somebody says,
I believe it when I see it. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe it when I'll see it. Yeah, I don't doubt that we will see it, but we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll never
yeah,
see.
Yeah.
Maybe there's
I don't
not
doubt that
free
it's
energy.
Possible,
is it a fantasy?
Exactly. Let's put it this way. Whether or not it is a fantasy, it's a fantasy to imagine that it's going to be allowed to happen easily by the establishment that exists. Because, of course, the entire infrastructure of the world runs on the energy of petroleum. But not even
yep.
just that. I mean, it's the idea of any sort of nuclear interests or any sort of power generation still relies on this idea of a centralized, you know, large-scale industrial operation for producing mm-hmm. the energy that's needed for industrial production. And to imagine that we could break that down so that, you know, people can get free energy, I mean, it's just that would fundamentally completely change not only the course of America or the industrialized world, but the human civilization itself. I mean, that
yeah.
would be an absolutely unimaginable event, and one that would potentially be for the good. But again, that's why I think there's so much riding on that. The fortunes and the wealth of so many people ride on that I have no doubt there's been a lot of advances towards that have been suppressed and would continue to be suppressed. So I'll believe it when I see it and when it's happening, and I'll welcome it with open arms, trust me. But on the idea of alternative energies, again, so much of that is a lot of snake oil that's being sold right now. I mean, hope in wind generation and things like that, which really have not lived up to the promise. And there's a lot of rhetoric about it, but not a lot of actual, not a real threat to the existing energy monopolies. So
what do you think?
The question, if the question is...
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, if the question is, will declining petroleum demand, as alternative energies come online, will that undermine the petrodollar? I think so. I think the petrodollar, I mean, petroleum really is only part of the backing at this point, I think, for the dollar. and the system that was set up in the 70s. I think that's been eroded over time, and I think now it's a lot more of just the sort of military enforcement of the U.S. around the world that really upholds that system. So I do see that the petrodollar itself is of less and less importance and will probably continue to be in coming decades.
What about the carbon tax? Is that not just a tax, but does it lay the foundation that we can treat carbon one way or another as a replacement for the petrodollar? You follow what I'm saying? Or is the carbon tax ultimately based on burning petroleum and coal? And if we get rid of them, what good is the carbon tax?
Carbon taxes, carbon credit, cap and trade, all of these ideas are ways to try to make money on the limiting and regulation of the carbon-based economy that we have right now. And so there are people, of course, in financial interests that are lined up to make a lot of money from that, and that's why it's being pumped at the international level right now, including by a lot of the big oil companies that supposedly are all against this. They know what side the bread is buttered on, and they're lining up with their caps in hand to get ready for the new reality as it comes into place. And as I believe I've mentioned on this show before, in the next 20 years, they're looking at an extra another $90 trillion of global energy infrastructure investments being made that they're hoping to steer towards these types of alternative energy ideas and other things that are supposed to, be in line with this carbon dioxide as the thermostat for the globe narrative that they're trying to sell people. So that is basically a large boondoggle that's being played on top of this. The real question is, what will actually replace oil, assuming that they do actually find something? And I really don't know what they're planning at this point, because unless it's nuclear, I just don't see anything that has even the potential for the capacity for that type of the energy requirements for the globe.
One last question. What have we got left here? About 2 minutes. There's an article from 24hgold.com, Global Stakes for the Brexit Vote. The in-out European Union referendum will finally take place in Great Britain on June 23rd. Not so long from now, a couple more months. The outcome of the long-promised vote could have a tremendous impact, not merely on the future of British Prime Minister Cameron and his coalition, but on the economic future of Great Britain and much of the world. What do you think about the Brexit vote? Is England going in or out? And if they leave the European area, European Union area, whatever the proper term is, will we really see something dramatic, or will it be fairly minor?
Oh, I have no doubt that that would be a dramatic move, and it would definitely affect the European Union as a whole. I would love to believe that there is the real opportunity for Britain to actually exit the EU, and I would certainly encourage people who are so inclined in Britain to get involved in that campaign. But let's keep in mind the European Union does not play fair. People might remember back when the original idea for the European Union constitution was being floated, and it's got voted down, I think, in France and the Netherlands before they abandoned that. And so then they came back with the Lisbon Treaty, which was the EU constitution in all but name, and they tried passing that around, but Ireland voted it down. So they made Ireland vote again. They didn't like that
vote.
We'll
show you.
They made them vote again.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
do it
until
you do it right. Get up there and vote on the blackboard, and 50 times I will vote for the European Union.
And it worked the second time around. So, again, I don't hold out hopes, because they're not playing fair, and one would expect they wouldn't let Britain go easily. And the most interesting story I've seen come out so far is that Obama came out trying to lecture Britain, you guys should stay in Europe. And there was a lot of a commentary
from
England.
Do as I say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. People saying, well, what hypocrisy coming from the U.S., which would never be involved in an organization like this. So, interesting.
Hi, James. Thank you for joining us on the program. Always appreciate your comments and insights. And I keep looking for a question that you won't be able to answer, but I haven't found it yet. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Frank the producer, and James Corbett. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.